Why would you not, after all that's happened, rule out Michael Lowry as somebody to support a government?
Well, first of all, let me confirm to you quite clearly and categorically, there are no discussions, no connections, no contact with any independent from the Fine Gael party. I don't envisage having to do business with any independent.
Okay.
Because the proposition I'm putting forward to the people is that they have the choice.
But just on the specific point, you've ruled out Fianna Fáil, you've ruled out Sinn Féin, so you are in the business of ruling people out. Why not just add Michael Lowry to that list?
My proposition is to say to you that I want the people to make a choice, to give their verdict, to decide if they want this recovery kept moving forward, if they want the impact of that developed into appointments.
With respect, Taoiseach, now we've covered that in the first half of this interview, but on the specific question about Deputy Michael Lowry, would you rule out him supporting your government?
I have no intention and no connections, and I don't envisage having to do business with any independent after the election.
But that's a prediction. Would you not just take him off the pitch? Given that you said in the Dáil in March 2011 in response, the tribunal finds serially against Deputy Michael Lowry. You use adjectives like arrogance, unseemliness, danger of the public reaction. And a quote, "I cannot imagine a mandate from the Irish people or true Democrats anywhere that would involve an order or desire or permission for the behaviour outlined in that report." Now, that surely puts Michael Lowry beyond the pale for your government.
Let me bring you back to what I said to you here. First of all, I confirm categorically there is no connection.
With respect, Taoiseach, that's not the question. I asked you, would you rely on the support of Michael Lowry?
I don't envisage having to do business with any independent member of the Dáil. Who the people elect is their business. My proposition is for the re-election of the Fine Gael Labour government. This recovery is very fragile. Now is not the time to mess around with it. Now is not the time to disrupt the progress that the people can clearly see.
Can you give a yes or no answer? Is Michael Lowry a potential person to support the government? You don't envisage it, but if the numbers came down to it, could you rule him out?
I have no intention of having to do business with any independent. I hope that that's clear.
It's not with respect, Taoiseach, as to whether or not you're going to do business with Michael Lowry after the next election. You don't want to do business with any independent, but you're not going to rule out Michael Lowry.
I have no intention of dealing with speculation about the outcome of the election. I don't intend to have to do business with any independent. I hope that that's clear.
But you have already ruled out other opposition parties. But nonetheless, Taoiseach, it's clear that you don't particularly want to get into that.
Bring you back to that, Cian. The choice that the people have to make is very clear. Who do they want to continue this recovery? My proposition is that we give them the opportunity to vote for the Fine Gael Labour government. Why would you put back a party into power that wrecked our economy, or give a semblance to a party that would, as I said last night, blow a massive hole in the public finances?
Okay. You also mentioned in your speech that you didn't get everything right. The departure of the Garda Commissioner, Martin Callan.
Now, last week, the Oireachtas Public Accounts Committee discussed a case of alleged abuse, that's sexual abuse or physical abuse or financial abuse, all relating to the care of vulnerable children and adults while they were in placement at a foster home in the southeast. At the centre of this are the alleged victims, most of whom are non-verbal and profoundly intellectually disabled. The abuse allegations go all the way back to the 1990s or the mid-1990s. But despite this, one disabled child was allowed to remain at the home for 13 years after the claims surfaced. It has led to several Garda and HSE inquiries, but to date, little by way of answers. The HSE says it apologised in relation to the care provided, but whether this apology was made or not is now contested. We've been speaking to the whistleblower who brought this case to public attention and also to TD John Deasy of the Public Accounts Committee. But first, our reporter John Burke has been giving me some of the background to this very complex case.
Well, this case relates to a foster family in the southeast who received placements of children and vulnerable adults from the mid-1980s to the mid-1990s. In total, over that period of time, 47 children or vulnerable adults would have lived in the house with them. Now, a complaint was made in 1995, which originated in the United Kingdom, from a previous resident at the house. They made an abuse complaint. That complaint made its way to the local health authorities here. A decision was taken arising from that in 1995 that there should be no further children or vulnerable adults placed with this family. However, and this is one of the critical issues in this case, There was one child at that time who lived with the foster family. They were not removed from the family and they stayed there for many years after, despite the allegations that existed at that time in relation to this foster family.
And that child was there on a permanent basis. Some of the others who were placed there, of course, were just placed there on a temporary basis, on a summer respite programme. But what specific issues of concern relate to this one particular client?
Well, this child, in effect, was first sent to the foster family in 1989 at the age of 11. Now, she was a non-verbal and profoundly intellectually disabled person. After that 1995 warning, which originated from the United Kingdom, a decision was taken to remove this girl, as well as to not add any additional children or vulnerable adults to the family. The foster family objected, the HSE overruled the objection, but nonetheless, she still continued to live there. And to this day, we don't know precisely why or even who made that exact decision. Shortly after that, in 1995, she became an adult, and therefore, any issue as to whether she required to be placed as a foster child ended. She remained there until 2009, and in that period of time, the person who's become known as the whistleblower became involved in her case. Now, what has emerged since in relation to the allegations that relate to this child, and I should say some of these are very graphic and are very, very serious. They include that she was kept living effectively under a stairs. There's claims that she was kept also at a time living out in a shed outside. She was abused, physically and sexually abused, allegedly with physical implements. There is an allegation that on the command of a certain recognised word that she would assume a sexual positions. So obviously some of these allegations are
truly shocking. Yes. I think most people haven't heard anything like this before. There have been a series of Garda and other investigations. What have they been able to discover in this case?
Well, one of the difficulties with these, of course, is that we don't know what some of the investigations even found, because very little has been revealed. In relation to the Garda investigations, there were a series of original complaints. Arising from that, the DPP has said there were no charges. Some of this, it's understood, relates to the fact that the vast majority of the alleged victims in these cases were essentially people who had severe intellectual disabilities and were non-verbal. One of the people who made one of those complaints was the chairman of the Public Accounts Committee, John McGuinness. And this is his account of what happened in that case. And again, I should say he repeats some of the alleged abuse in relation to this case, which is obviously quite graphic.
The whistleblower in this case made a disclosure to me, and I in turn brought it to the attention of Pier Street Garda Station at the time, which I was obliged to do. I've had one telephone call since I made that public disclosure, and following that I met with a local sergeant who told me that the body of evidence was not there to bring forward a prosecution. At least that's what the DPP had said. And I find that extraordinary, because as Deputy DC has said, there's 47 individuals, 47 families, I think is the figure. The social worker involved in this, hugely professional and deeply concerned, has fought the system for years to try and give some sort of representation to one of the individuals concerned. And having read the paperwork in relation to these cases, you feel sick after it. Just what happened that didn't uncover this? Why wasn't it uncovered when I think that the lady in question turned up and acted out sexual acts on the prompt of a word, a person that is profoundly intellectually disabled?
That was John McGuinness at the Public Accounts Committee. Now, a more recent complaint has also been made to the Gardaí, John.
That's right. A social worker in this case has made a complaint of criminal negligence. Now, that was revealed in the Public Accounts Committee only last week. That would come under the 2009 Criminal Justice Act if a conviction was secured, and the sentence in that goes up to 10 years for a custodial sentence. Now, there have also been a series of other HSE reports and reviews, very little about which we know, other than that part of one carried out by the management consultant Conal Devine was released, and again only in part, to the Public Accounts Committee. Now, this includes reference to an apology for failings in care in relation to the 47 children who would have and vulnerable adults who would have passed through the foster family. However, again, there's a more serious level of apology in the report in relation to the one child and the one client who remained with the family for a longer period of time. Again, this is the only report that's been made public, and again, it's only in part.
And this is because, correct me if I'm wrong, as long as there's a live Garda investigation, these reports carried out by or for the HSE cannot be published in full, correct?
This was the justification, although in contrary to that, the DPP has said there will be no criminal charges in relation to the initial investigations. Of course, we now know there is now a new investigation, and how that impacts on that isn't clear.
On the issue of the apology, the HSE said that they made an apology to the woman who was at this foster home for 20 years and that they made another apology to her mother. But whether this apology was made or not is being contested.
Yes, the HSE met with the whistleblower and in her capacity as a social worker and with the client, and separately they say they phoned the client's birth mother. Now, the HSE claimed that an apology was made on both these occasions. The whistleblower has denied this. So has the client's birth mother. And in an email correspondence seen by this programme, the local health manager prepared a note of what was discussed during that phone call, because the birth mother, it's believed, sought one. And having seen sight of that, there is certainly no reference in that post-meeting briefing note to any apology being made. And then also, this programme has also learned that the third person, who is familiar, very closely familiar with this issue and that meeting, has also made a protected disclosure to John DCTD, who's also a member of the Public Accounts Committee, saying that they believe there was no apology made at that meeting.
And we'll hear from John DC shortly. And it's probably important to stress that the HSE made it clear to the Public Accounts Committee that the apology was made. Once the contradiction then was made public, they wrote subsequently again to the PAC to point out that they did make the apology. So, as we say, that's contested. They're insisting there was verbal apologies to the client while the social worker was present at that particular meeting. And, as you say, that they also apologised to the birth mother in a phone conversation on the same day. Now, what's the whistleblower saying about that specifically?
Well, for legal reasons, we can't identify her in any way. So while she's spoken to the programme, we've used another reporter's voice to voice up her comments. This is how she reacted to the claim by the HSE that it had apologised.
Well, the first I heard of an apology at all was actually from the media when I was contacted for comment on the report issued by the HSE to the PAC in December. A meeting did take place, that's correct. The HSE never mentioned that an apology would be offered at that meeting. No apology was made or offered. And the suggestion I understand the HSE have made that a formal letter was drafted but wasn't issued at our agency's insistence is just outrageous. Unfortunately, it's actually typical of the way that they have conducted themselves in this case all along, and typical of HSE culture in general. But we've been seeking accountability and an apology for years for our client, and it did not happen at that meeting. And if it is now to happen, it should absolutely be a formal letter and in writing, and we are unequivocal on that.
And those are the words of the whistleblower, spoken by an RTE journalist. For legal reasons, we can't identify that whistleblower in any way. Now, John, as you've explained earlier, there are clearly issues here for the Public Accounts Committee, and that part of the story is about how the HSE spent money in a number of different ways, but especially on those inquiries that they carried out, and indeed who carried them out. But people will wonder why this hasn't gone through the normal channels. What's the whistleblower's explanation or response to that?
Well, the whistleblower has called for a commission of inquiry. She says this is the only way that this will be resolved. She explained when she spoke to the programme earlier how she has essentially gone around all the houses to try and raise this as an issue, and the Public Accounts Committee was the most recent vehicle for that.
It's been about 6.5 years that I've been seeking to have these matters addressed through the HSE local office, the Department of Health, the Department of Children and Youth Affairs, Corporate HSE, the Office of the Ombudsman, the Office of Protective Disclosures. We've had an independent inquiry that wasn't published. We've had subsequent reviews. We now have reviews of reviews. I wrote to the National Director of Quality Improvement. I raised it directly with the National Director for Social Care. I raised it directly with the Director General of the HSE, and I still haven't been able to get any answers. All that I achieved going through these processes were endless inquiries, reviews, senior counsel reviewing the reviews, and huge profits for solicitors and management consultants, but no actual discernible benefit for the clients, and certainly no accountability. So despite spending well over $500,000 on the process, since I started looking for answers, we don't have one finding, we don't have one answer to the concerns raised.
The words of the whistleblower in this case, spoken by an RTE journalist. As I say, we can't broadcast the actual voice of the whistleblower for legal reasons. Well, John, there's a lot in this, but we can't forget that despite the fact that there's an awful lot to, if you like, understand, the central issue here always is the people affected by this, the clients, and in particular, the woman who allegedly suffered appalling abuse over a long number of years. Was the whistleblower able to say anything about how that woman is now?
She was very careful not to, say anything that might identify either the client or indeed any of the people who passed through the foster home, but she did give us some indication of what the impact of this issue has been on those people.
Well, obviously I can't or I won't go into details about her or divulge her information, but I think we've all seen the reports that the media have kind of been circulating recently about what happened and what the concerns are in relation to the placement. And one can only really imagine the impact that that might have on a person for the rest of their lives. And it's not just my client is at the centre of this, but also the 46 other people out there and their families who've participated in Garda inquiries, they've participated in HSE reviews, and they have to listen to all of these media reports of what is alleged to have happened and what the concerns are. But they have no answers about why that happened, who is responsible, or who will be held accountable. And that can only really compound any abuse that they have suffered.
The words of the whistleblower in this case. Well, for more on this, I've been speaking to Fine Gael TD John Deasy, who's a member of the PAC, the Public Accounts Committee, and I began by asking him for his reaction to the allegations.
The problem with this whole issue is that it's nameless and it's faceless. And the individuals in question, many of them are non-verbal. They wouldn't be able to testify in court. And that really is part of the problem here. And it's been some of the difficulties that the Gardaí have faced. Have I dealt with anything like this? No, when I was introduced to this issue well over a year ago, shocked me to my core.
There's also the question about the speed with which, or the lack of speed with which, the agencies have dealt with this in terms of the investigation and the reports into it. And I know there's complications there, but the whistleblower has told us, as she said to others, is that one of the reasons that she's gone to the PAC is that she's at the end of her tether. She's tried everything else.
Yeah, and I think the Public Accounts Committee is getting to the end of its tether as well. I think we've exhausted pretty much every line. And I suppose we're relying on now the Gardaí to make a final stab at this, and maybe the Garda Commissioner's office might be the end of the road when it comes to that. You know, to get back to what we're talking about, without me being able to deal with the specific allegations of sex abuse, you know, in one case, one individual was taken from the foster home by care workers, social workers. And immediately they brought her to a dentist and had 7 teeth extracted. That's how bad her dental care had been. She was nonverbal. And I think people, you know, you've got to understand how much pain that person would have been in for years. But at the same time, it really doesn't get to the core of this issue.
But of course, the people at the heart of this, they would say that they haven't yet received an apology. They would directly contradict the HSE's account of an apology having been given. They say that didn't happen. The whistleblower says where we need to go with this now is a commission of inquiry. Do you believe that that's the course to take, or where should this go now? What questions do you have?
You know, we've called for a commission of inquiry, myself and John McGuinness. I think we now have a senior counsel looking at this, and that's very specific within the terms of reference. And personally, at this point, I think the Gardaí need to actually take another look at this. I know the DPP has taken a look at it, and they didn't feel, with the files they were looking at, that they could pursue a prosecution. I know a new complaint has been made, and it's a completely different line to what was being considered previously. I think what the Garda Commissioner needs to do is take a look at that, put weight behind it. And if there is a possibility for, we'll say, a line of investigation and ultimately a prosecution, you know, I think that the state owes these individuals at the very least that. You know, in this country, we like to talk about who's the most vulnerable. And, you know, if you ask 10 different people, you'd probably get 10 different answers. Personally speaking, I think that, you know, I'd make the case that mentally disabled children who were, you know, subjected to tremendous neglect and worse, frankly, over the course of many years, should be contenders for, you know, the moniker of the most vulnerable people in our society. And for that reason, I think the state owes them, at the very least, you know, a debt with regard to following up on any potential criminal investigation that they think is relevant.
TD John Deasy.